Good evening. Window is closing on controlling the COVID-19 epidemic. Is it the world's darkest hour? A whistleblower speaks. Cuomo says the virus is winning, and the detectives union calls the mayor's health commissioner the B word. With these and other stories, I'm Paul D'Arienzo with the news for Thursday, May 14th, 2020. It was a hearing like no other before the House Subcommittee on Health in Washington today. The members, most wearing masks, struggling to be heard and answer questions as Democrats and Republicans took turns grilling the former head of the Biomedical Advanced Research and Development Authority, or BARDA, as it's called. The witness, BARDA's former director, Richard Bright, who says he's a whistleblower and was kicked to another job because of his warnings to the Trump administration about the efficacy of a favorite drug of the president's. Bright's testimony described a detached White House, blindsided and unwilling to confront the most serious problem facing the nation and the world in generations.
Today, the world is confronting a public health emergency unlike any we've seen in over a century. We are facing a highly transmissible and deadly virus, which not only claims lives, but also disrupts the very foundations of our society. The American healthcare system is being taxed to the limit. Our economy is spiraling downward, and our population is being paralyzed by fear, stemming from a lack of a coordinated response and a dearth of accurate, clear communication about the path forward. Americans yearn to get back to work, to open their businesses and to provide for their families. I get that. However, what we do must be done carefully and with guidance from the best scientific minds. Our window of opportunity is closing. If we fail to improve our response now based on science, I fear the pandemic will get worse and be prolonged. There will be likely a resurgence of COVID-19 this fall. It will be greatly compounded by the challenges of seasonal influenza. Without better planning, 2020 could be the darkest winter in modern history. The virus is here. It's everywhere. We need to be able to find it, isolate it, and stop it. Initially, our nation was not as prepared as we should have been, as we could have been. Some scientists raised early warning signals that were overlooked, and pages from our pandemic playbook were ignored by some in leadership.
Repeatedly, House Republicans tried to use Bright's own words against him, an order he made to look into the malaria drug hydroxychloroquine earlier this year, but Bright was having none of it.
I've heard those anecdotal stories as well. And they were not conducted in the context of a randomized controlled clinical study. It's very difficult to understand data from those types of observational studies or anecdotal stories. So the drug might have some benefit in some populations, but we won't know that until we have that information from a truly randomized controlled clinical study. Many of those studies are ongoing now. Some of those studies we're starting to see data from, and those studies in those populations tested haven't shown an overwhelming evidence of benefit from the use of hydroxychloroquine in those patients.
Another Trump favorite is the drug remdesivir, shown to be effective in some cases. Bright said when he first brought to Trump's attention the existence of this drug, the president showed no interest.
There was no action taken on the urgency to come up with a plan for acquisition of limited doses of remdesivir, nor to distribute those limited doses of remdesivir once we had the scientific data to support their use for people infected with this virus.
And instead of acting on your recommendations, was the response of others to try and cut you out of key meetings, marginalize your participation?
I was told that my urgings were causing a commotion, and I was removed from those meetings.
Bright said that without action by the federal government, the nation and the world could be facing its greatest challenge.
The window is closing to address this pandemic because we still do not have a standard, centralized, coordinated plan to take our nation through this response. I believe with proper leadership and collaboration across government, with the best science leading the way, we can devise a comprehensive strategy. We can devise a plan that includes all of Americans and help them, help us, guide us through this pandemic. But time is running out because the virus is still spreading everywhere. People are getting restless. to leave their homes, and we have to make critical decisions on how to balance the economy and science. My concern about this fall is compounded by my knowledge and preparation in response to many years of influenza outbreaks, pandemic influenza outbreaks, and seasonal influenza outbreaks. In our country in 2017, we had nearly 79,000 people die in the U.S. from influenza. That, coupled with a COVID-19 resurgence this fall, could be devastating for our healthcare systems and for Americans. We have a limited window of opportunity to get plans in place to address both of those.
Meanwhile, as Dr. Bright was speaking to the House, President Trump made a speech to workers at the Owens & Minor Incorporated Distribution Center in Allentown, Pennsylvania, where personal protection equipment is being shipped throughout the United States. He continued his verbal assaults on the Obama administration and his presumptive challenger, former Vice President Joe Biden.
Under the previous administration, the stockpile was depleted and never fully refilled. Most of the N95 masks were distributed during the N1H1. Now, you know who says that, right? N1H1. Who says that? Sleepy Joe Biden. Remember? He said the N1H1. I said, isn't it the other way around? They said, yes, sir. But he said it, so it doesn't make any difference. But during the H1N1, and that's the swine flu, and it was a pandemic in 2009 that was not well handled at all, got very poor marks. Never again will another president inherit empty shelves or expired products, at least hopefully in 5 years you're talking about, maybe 9 years, maybe 13 years, but you'll never have to deal with empty shelves and you'll never have to deal with a depleted military.
The president was not wearing a mask, and several employees kept a safe distance away by the Secret Service. All wore protective masks as they greeted the president. Thomas Ferguson is professor emeritus at the University of Massachusetts, Boston. He's written on the U.S. response to COVID-19. He says the government's stimulus plan has not been addressing the massive and long-term damage that's been being done to the economy. He says the Trump team seems to want the disease to spread and infect the country, a so-called herd immunity of the population. But Ferguson adds the result may be countless deaths.
There are enough leaks to show you that there were a lot of people, including a lot of major financiers close to the president, who were advocating basically don't do a lockdown. Now, when the Imperial College studies came out in London, their projections of the death rates were so shocking that it jolted the British off their policy. And you could see the ripple effects crossing the Atlantic on that, too. But my take is that an awful lot of business people still like the idea of just doing rapid herd immunity. And you can see that very clearly expressed, especially in the, you know, among some of the Republican Party spokespersons. The line everybody quotes is that Lieutenant Governor of Texas, who said, well, there are some things just more important than life, you know, like what, going shopping, one wants to say. In that sense, what you're looking at is a world in which a bunch of white-collar people who can stay home and work are telling a bunch of blue-collar people to go back to work. That's an oversimplification, but it's not a lot. Now, you can see alternative views popping in the business community, especially in the tech and in the medical communities, where, you know, they get the point that this is pretty costly. They also think they have things to push. A large chunk of high-tech firms would like to push all, everything from COVID virus tracing to more working at home to internet delivery, more things pushed through the internet. You got a fairly big coalition that would is willing to change the economic dynamics, if you like. So, and the health professionals, especially early in the crisis, you know, they got stuck with all the costs. If people came in sick, the health folks were not really prepared either. I still think the only sort of sector of professional elites that you have much hope of getting accurate accounts from of costs are from health professionals, in part because the sort of professional norms for medicine, I think, are just a little tighter than they are in the business community. what's really going on is this tug of war. And, you know, I don't disagree when Thomas Friedman in the New York Times said the other day, is Trump really pushing herd immunity? Yeah, that's exactly what I think he's been doing. Pay lip service to the cause and then just encourage people to actually rise and revolt. That just seems to me, frankly, it seems quite irresponsible. Running this kind of a thing in the United States, where you know public health systems barely exist in some states, where unemployment insurance is weak to begin with and doesn't exist in the long term, hardly at all, and where the main connection to health insurance is through employers, when you've got massive layoffs already and more coming, this is a formula for real trouble. In the nursing homes, the death rates are astronomical. You know, one needs to ask, why is this happening? What's going on here? I don't take it that actually most business people would just like to do their employees in. On the other hand, if you don't help them with the costs of reorganizing the work, getting masks and things like that, you know, you're going to turn it into a catfight and a scramble for economic existence. That's where public policy should be headed. It's mostly not headed in that direction right now. The Trump administration in particular has been quite unwilling to use the Defense Production Act. They finally invoked it for meatpacking, but they, as far as I can tell, they haven't done anything to help the employers reorganize the work. And as best as I can tell, OSHA, the Occupational Health and Safety, is doing very little or nothing. You need greatly expanded assistance to people, including businesses, how to cope with the health problems of going back to work. Otherwise, this is going to be a fiasco. It's obvious Mitch McConnell and the Republican Party could not be blunter about it. Their top priority is to just write blanket immunity from lawsuits for businesses. Now, it seems to me that if you are actually trying to help your workforce survive, with masks and redesign of the work and things like that, you obviously, if you're trying to do a good faith effort that's really a seriously good faith, you should get some protection from suits. But just giving people blanket immunity is going to lead, it's going to lead to an absolute catastrophe, I think. I mean, it's really crazy. But in a nutshell, that's what how I'd assess this situation. Market forces here don't line up very well with the individual incentives that society really needs. You need some government intervention to get that to happen.
Thomas Ferguson is professor emeritus at the University of Massachusetts, Boston. The British imperial model showed 2.2 million potential deaths in the United States from COVID-19 if there is no attempt to stop the spread of the disease. And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. New York Governor Cuomo was at the Upstate Medical Center in Syracuse today for his daily briefing on the state's response to the COVID-19 pandemic. He outlined the dire seriousness of the virus and was humble, as he said, despite some flattening of the curve of new infections and deaths. Overall, the virus has been winning.
This virus has been ahead of us every step of the way. I can't tell you how many quote-unquote facts I was told that then changed, right? When the virus started, the virus was coming from China. Everybody was looking at China. Turns out the virus came from Europe, and nobody told us. When this first started, if you had the disease and recovered, you then had antibodies, and you were immune. My brother had the virus, recovered, so he had the antibodies. We were told, well, then you're immune from getting it again. And we had plans to have people who tested for the antibodies, they could go back to work because they were immune. And the facts changed. You know what? Maybe they're not immune, or maybe they're only a little immune, or they're partially immune. Then we were told children are not affected by the virus. That was the only good news, by the way, in the whole first evaluation. Children aren't affected. Okay, now maybe children are affected and we just didn't know it. Okay, well, what do we know now? Well, we're studying 100 children from 1 to 21. Okay, Michaela, my daughter, is 22. Well, we only have people up until 21. So she's okay. Yeah, until we have someone who's 22 or 23 or 24. So the facts change. I have done my best to give people the information that I know. But I want you to have the same caution flag that I live with. The facts on this virus have changed, and I believe they will continue to change. So take this all with a grain of salt, and my basic point is, do not underestimate this virus. It has beaten us at every turn, and it has surprised us at every turn. Don't take it lightly. Don't underestimate it. I believe the facts will change as we go forward. The more we learn about the virus, the more the facts change, and the worse it gets.
The governor's daughter, Michaela, sat at the table with her father during today's news conference. The spread of the new complications among young people from birth to 21 years of age is often claimed to have taken health experts by surprise. But last month, the executive director of the Health Emergency Program of the WHO, Dr. Michael Ryan, had answered a question about a strange new disease affecting children.
But they have said this is an atypical Kawasaki syndrome. They're describing something they have seen in children. It's a very important observation. And it may reflect, too, as we've seen in adults, the fact that the SARS-CoV-2 virus causing COVID-19, you know, obviously is causing inflammation and attacks tissue other than lung tissue. And we may be in a situation where clinicians are looking at what those other effects of having this coronavirus infection are. And we've seen this in the past with many emerging diseases. They don't necessarily only attack one type of tissue. There can be multiple organs affected, and many of you have seen the reports of other organs that have been affected with this disease. So it's really important that this information is shared around the world. It's really important that pediatricians and clinicians get time to collect information and share that. But again, just to reassure parents out there, this is a rare complication, and one should always be watchful in children who are experiencing infectious disease for any deterioration in the condition. But I think it's important that parents out there are reassured.
Dr. Michael Ryan of the WHO. This news conference was held on April 30th. Shortly after this news conference, the one on April 30th, President Trump cut off all United States funding to the WHO, saying the organization had failed to pressure China into more transparency regarding a biological lab in Wuhan, a conspiracy theory that's been debunked by intelligence agencies and the military. And one of the biggest outbreaks of COVID-19 in New York State has been in Oneida, New York, where the Green Empire Farm, a hydroponic tomato growing venture with 300 employees, has been struck hard by the virus.
Yeah, and one of the points to learn from Madison County, I think, you know, it's too easy for people to say in more rural communities, well, this is not our problem, right? This is a city problem. This is an urban problem. This is New York and Detroit, New York City, Detroit. It's Michigan. It's Chicago. No, it's Madison County, which is a rural county. You open a plant. You open a business, you go to a gathering, you have one person infected. One person infected, they can infect dozens in one afternoon. One afternoon. I don't care if you're a rural community, suburban community, urban community, nobody is immune. That's what Madison County says. That's what these meat processing plants in Middle America say. In rural communities, one person. You open a business tomorrow with 50 employees. You don't do it right. One person was infected. You can infect 30 of the 50 in one afternoon.
By Thursday, 169 of the 340 workers at the farm have been tested positive for the coronavirus. And in New York City, the New York Police Sergeants Union described City Health Commissioner Dr. Osiris Barbat as a bitch on Wednesday. The New York Post had reported that Barbat had a heated discussion after some cops tried to hijack a shipment of PPE gear meant for hospital workers at the height of the pandemic when 1,000 people a day were dying in hospitals. The tweet from the Sergeants Benevolent Association read, "Truth is, this bitch has blood on her hands. By why should anyone be surprised? The NYPD has suffered under de Blasio since he became mayor." The mayor had this to say today.
If you could respond to that aspect of it, as well as the SBA calling her a bitch.
I don't know what the scenario was. I do know that whatever the scenario was, it is crucial that our first responders have PPEs, period. And obviously that our healthcare workers have PPEs. So there's no either or here. All of those who are serving at the front lines need to be protected. Separate from the question of what people said, the bigger question of was the distribution happening to the NYPD in the number they needed and the timing they needed. When I heard there was some kind of problem or delay, I stepped in to make sure it was corrected. Because remember, on top of everything else, NYPD was short-staffed, a huge number of people were sick. We were asking so much of the officers on duty, it was crucial to provide them with the protection that was available. What everyone had to do was figure out a way to distribute fairly to everyone involved, because there was no choosing among people. Both first responders and healthcare workers needed help. What the SBA is saying, what Ed Mullins is saying or authorizing is absolutely unacceptable. He should apologize, but he never does. That language is misogynist and unacceptable, and I've learned long ago that so much of what comes out of the SBA is divisive and meant to set the city back. I don't know how an organization could be so consistently negative towards its own city and towards its own people, but that's what they do. But no, that's absolutely unacceptable. As I said, two wrongs do not make a right. And I think everyone needs to focus on trying to, in the middle of this crisis, be respectful and try to work together and not divide people.
And that's Mayor de Blasio speaking earlier today. And finally, U.S. Senator Richard Burr will step aside as chairman of the powerful Senate Intelligence Committee after the FBI seized his mobile telephone in a major escalation of a probe of his stock trades before the downturn sparked by the coronavirus pandemic. Republican Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said Burr contacted him on Thursday morning to inform of his decision to step aside temporarily during the investigation. McConnell said in a statement, "We agreed that this decision would be in the best interest of the committee and will be effective at the end of the day tomorrow." Burr has denied wrongdoing and said he relied solely on news reports to guide decisions on stock sales amid reports he and other senators sold shares after private briefings on the risk of the coronavirus crisis. He told reporters at the U.S. Capitol on Thursday he decided to step aside because he did not want the investigation to distract the Intelligence Committee from its work. Burr said, "I thought this was the best thing to do." Known for bipartisanship, the Senate panel is about to release an extensive report led by Burr on Russia's involvement in the 2016 U.S. presidential election. U.S. intelligence determined that Moscow sought to meddle in the campaign to boost the Trump candidacy. Moscow denies such actions. Trump dismisses the allegations as a hoax. The Republican senator turned over his phone to FBI agents after they served a search warrant at his Washington home. The warrant marked a significant step up in the investigation of Burr's stock sales in mid-February when he and other lawmakers were getting regular briefings on the coronavirus outbreak, and President Donald Trump and some of his political allies were downplaying the threat to the public. Trump said he did not know anything about Burr's decision and had not discussed Burr's situation with anyone at the Department of Justice. Trump said, "I know nothing about it. That's too bad." And that's some of the news for Thursday, May 14th, 2020. The news was produced by Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. For the WBAI News, I'm Paul DiRienzo.